Hello again, my name is Craig Brockschmidt. I work as a program manager in the Windows ecosystem team, and I'd like to welcome you to the second in this two-part series on aspects of the Windows 8 platform that aren't always visible, but very essential for building great apps. In part one, we looked at those aspects that are visible, but not all that glamorous, like those secondary elements in a home that don't get as much attention as the obvious stuff. Here in part two, we'll explore other aspects that may not be visible at all, but will manifest in ways that consumers will definitely experience. Imagine, for example, if the light switches and faucets in your home worked some of the time or not at all. While you'd learn to tolerate these things, you'd probably take the first opportunity to live somewhere better. Similarly, while your app might work okay without paying attention to some of these details, your competition will see these as opportunities to outshine you and invite consumers to live in their apps instead. For starters, your app will experience differing input capabilities, and Windows Store policy requires that apps must be usable with only touch, only mouse, and only keyboard. These considerations are also important for accessibility. Fortunately, you get all of this for free when you use built-in controls, and because those controls provide extensive styling capabilities, they should serve nearly all of your needs. Pointer unification also means that you don't have to differentiate mouse, touch, and stylus input unless you need to, which is very convenient. With the keyboard, while controls handle keyboard events automatically, you should think through page-to-page navigation with the keyboard, as well as navigation between controls, typically using the tab key. As for sensors, I highly recommend thinking of sensors as a form of input when they are available, because they reveal the relationships between the device and the physical world, both how it's positioned in and how it's moving through that world. Managing credentials is another one of those things that many apps need to do and is certainly not glamorous. Yet doing this well can mean the difference between an app that consumers love and one that they despise. Now, if you collect credentials in the app, store them in the Password Vault using the Password Vault API. Once there, you can retrieve them without a prompt when the same user is logged into Windows. But do remember to allow the user to manage their login through the Settings panel. Single sign-on with a Microsoft account is a feature of the Live SDK. It means that when a user logs into Windows with a Microsoft account, they don't need to enter credentials again or create accounts for any app that also uses it. Even if, as shown here, the user is logged into Windows using other credentials, like a domain login, the first app that uses single sign-on will have the prompt shown automatically, after which no apps need to ask. Users can even eliminate this prompt by linking their domain credentials to the Microsoft account. To optimize battery life, among other things, Windows 8 itself manages the lifetime of Windows Store apps, suspending those that are in the background, except in specific scenarios, so they don't consume resources. While suspended, Windows might also unload an app from memory entirely if more memory is needed by a foreground app. At the same time, Windows wants it to appear to the consumer as if those apps were never closed, meaning that when the app restarts, it should have the same state as it did previously. So when an app is suspended, it should save its state. If Windows later terminates the app to free memory, it remembers that fact and tells the app to reload that state the next time it started. If, on the other hand, the user switches back to a suspended app, all its memory structures are in place, so it just starts running again. However, since any amount of time has passed, from less than a second to hours, weeks, or months, an app may need to refresh some of its data, especially that which comes from online sources. It might also need to refresh server sessions if timeout periods have been exceeded, or update live tiles. Now, there are a number of places where an app can save its session state in its app data folder, specifically local, temp, and roaming areas. Each of these allow you to save files in any format as well as manage key value pairs of settings. Local and temp areas are great for storing session state, local caches, transient files, and expanding compressed data in your app package to their runtime formats. Just remember that temp state is subject to the disk cleanup tool, so you shouldn't store anything there that your app really depends upon. Use it instead for caches that can be restored again at runtime. With roaming, Windows 8 adds an exciting feature whereby roaming app state, up to 100K, is automatically duplicated on other devices where the same consumer is logged in. This helps create transparent app experiences as the consumer moves between those devices. Some great uses of this are to roam email account settings, user configuration settings like a profile picture, the viewing position of a video, the reading position in a book or magazine, progress in a game, saved searches, and so on. Many settings that appear in an app setting panels are often good candidates for roaming. On the other hand, navigation state, the last you searched, most recently opened files or other such lists, and any settings that are specific to the device, its hardware characteristics, and its file system should not be roamed because they won't mean anything on the other device. Similarly, there's no need to roam data that was acquired from an online source because it would have to be downloaded one way or the other and could otherwise risk exceeding the 100K limit. Speaking of networks and data transfer, it's very important to remember that network connectivity can vary throughout the lifetime of your app. Here are some important questions to ask. What happens if your app starts without an active network, both from the tile and through contracts? What happens if your app is run the first time without connectivity? What happens if connectivity is lost while the app is running? What happens when connectivity comes back? What happens when the connection changes, as with speed, cost, and so forth? And what is your offline experience? In short, since devices with your running app can move in and out of different networks, some of which may be metered and others not, try to think through the user's experience with such changes and respond well in your app. It's actually a requirement in the store certification policy that you prevent a bill shock by not doing large data transfers on metered networks and being aware of when the user's data limit on such a network might be exceeded. Having a great offline experience brings up the question of caching data in general, as it can very much improve the performance and thus user perception of an app. In part one of this talk, we discussed making use of progress indicators when the user may have to wait more than 2 seconds for an operation to complete. With caching, we can rephrase the question to be, can the need for those progress indicators be mostly eliminated? You can also ask just how fast you can make the transition between pages. Consider a common scenario where the consumer will likely want to go quickly back and forth between a list of results and detail pages for different items in that list. As a first level of optimization, cache the list results so that the app doesn't have to perform the same search or download again when it's going back to that page, though it could if it's been a long time since those results were obtained. A second optimization is to not actually navigate between pages at all. That is, tapping an item in the list can just show details on top of the list, either using a flyout UI or just obscuring the list page entirely. When the user goes back or dismisses the flyout then, the list page is already fully constructed. Alternately, you might dispense with the navigation altogether and use a split view instead, also known as a master detail view. Speaking of lists, our final topic is virtualizing lists and optimizing their performance. Unlike other controls, lists can become arbitrarily large, since they are made to accommodate any number of items. At the same time, any given device can only show so many items at one time, so it's not necessary to retrieve all the items at once. List virtualization is a means to demand load each virtual list of the page. The list control notifies the app when it's been scrolled or panned to a particular page, at which time the app only needs to load the items for that page. The app can also delay load media like images and video, which allows the user to pan quickly through the page without waiting for all that media to download each time. It's also helpful with lists to sometimes separate managing the data from rendering the control that projects the data, and to manage your own data binding. Performance is also greatly improved by minimizing the rendering time for each item, especially if you implement your own functions for that rendering. So in closing, we've seen in both parts of this talk many considerations that will help your apps become highly responsive to various user actions that don't come directly to your app, and also responsive and optimized for various conditions that your app will encounter during its lifetime. And again, I wish you all the best in your efforts to build apps that are beautiful, yes, but go beyond just beautiful.